Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. We are taking a look at Drive to Survive Season 5, which covers the 2022 Formula One racing season. The 2022 Formula One season introduced a fresh era of racing with major regulation changes designed to improve competition. Teams face new challenges adapting to the revised aerodynamics and tire designs, leading to shifting performances throughout the year. Unexpected twists, intense rivalries, and strategic battles shaped the championship fight, while emerging talents and seasoned veterans delivered memorable moments on and off the track. With new circuits added to the calendar and dramatic developments both on and off the grid, the season provided an exciting blend of unpredictability, triumphs, and setbacks that kept fans engaged until the very end.
This season of Drive to Survive addressed how drivers wanted to deal with legacy. Three drivers on the grid were former multi-time world champions. There was Sebastian Vettel, a four-time world champion with Red Bull, with the latest title coming 9 years before the 2022 season, after being unceremoniously dismissed from Ferrari, ended up in Aston Martin, which did not produce the hoped-for title run. Fernando Alonso, a two-time world champion, with the last title attained in 2006, and the original Goldilocks of Formula One, kept switching teams, hoping for better results. But with the reverse Midas touch, kept not finding the right fit and was dissatisfied at Alpine. And Lewis Hamilton, seven, or shall we say eight, time world champion, who has to find motivation and inspiration after the heartbreaking and devastating loss of the Drivers' Championship in 2021. Each of these former champions, and arguably the greats of the sport, had to decide how they wanted to cement their legacy in Formula One, and whether it was worth it to continue the grind, whether with their current teams or new teams, or realize that they achieved all they wanted to achieve in the sport and retire. Each makes a different choice, which impacts the grid in spectacular ways. Another side of legacy is having drivers whose roots in Formula One are generational, having to learn to stand on their own two feet and try to deal with additional expectations and pressure. This is exemplified by the different path of Max Verstappen and Mick Schumacher, whose fathers were F1 drivers and friends. Mick's path is more difficult since his father, Michael Schumacher, is the most accomplished F1 driver whose achievements are only matched by Lewis Hamilton. It would be impossible for anyone to live up to Michael's legacy, but it is doubly hard for Mick, who, as has been obvious since the last season, is not a good fit for Formula One. Max, on the other hand, does not have lofty achievements to live up to, since the achievements of his father, Jos Verstappen, in Formula One are nowhere close to Michael's. It also helps that Max is a generational talent, so eclipsing his father is both expected and easier to achieve. There were also plenty of blunders, from a driver signing announcement that ended up being premature, to the complete disintegration of Ferrari from being title contenders and leading the championship to barely being able to fight for second place in the constructors.
The season was dominated by Red Bull, with Max winning his second consecutive world championship and Red Bull securing their first constructors' championship since 2013, ending Mercedes' 8-year streak. However, Red Bull did face its share of scrutiny and scandal that we will discuss later in the episode. The introduction of major regulation changes brought new aerodynamic rules, including ground effect floors designed to reduce dirty air and improve close racing, along with larger 18-inch low-profile tires. These changes initially caught teams off guard, with Mercedes struggling early on due to porpoising issues caused by the new ground effect design. We bid farewell to some big names, welcome new ones, and dive deep into the world of team principles. Now let's jump into the spoilers. If you read Gunter Steiner's book, Surviving to Drive, you'll have extra insights into the 2022 season. We also have a podcast reviewing the book as well, if you'd like to give that a listen. When Russia invaded Ukraine a few weeks prior to the start of the racing season, Haas was in a difficult position. Eventually, the decision was made to cut ties with their title sponsor, Yuri Kalli and Nikita Mazepin. Given the timing, Gunther decided to bring Kevin Magnussen back to the team. Kevin Magnussen's return to Haas in 2022 was a standout performance, as he delivered a series of impressive results, including P7 in the Bahrain Grand Prix, his first race back with the team, which Drive to Survive shows that he could not even remember how to put on his helmet. Despite a car that was inconsistent, Magnussen's resilience and strong racecraft made him a key asset for Haas, helping them finish fifth in the Constructors' Championship.
The battle between Alpine and McLaren in the 2022 Formula season for fourth place in the Constructors' Championship was overshadowed by the drivers' contracts debacle to end all debacles. The drivers' musical chairs began in earnest when Sebastian Vettel decided to retire and create an Instagram account just to make this announcement. This opened the Aston Martin seat for Fernando Alonso, whom everyone, including his team, Alpine, thought would sign an extension with Alpine. Alpine rushed to announce Oscar Piastri, the product of Alpine Drivers Academy, the winner of Formula 2 in his first year, and their reserve driver for 2022 as their 2023 driver alongside Esteban Ocon. Unfortunately, they forgot one little thing, which came to light when Piastri publicly denied it, posting a tweet heard around the world that became with the phrase, "Without my agreement," that Alpine released the statement without his consent. He had not signed with Alpine and would not be driving for them in 2023. Behind the scenes, McLaren has already signed Piastri as a replacement for Daniel Ricciardo. The idea that a team would publicly announce a driver signing without verifying that the driver in fact signed was hugely embarrassing. It is hard to believe that in this day and age, any team would be that irresponsible. Alpine created a clown show at a time when they needed to attract the best talent possible to replace Alonso, their multi-time champion driver. Alpine tried to salvage the situation by bringing up an underrated contract theory of unjust enrichment, which gets name-checked and explained as Oscar taking the money for his development from Alpine, knowing what was expected of him, but giving nothing in return. Zach Brown, on behalf of McLaren, admits that there may be something in Oscar's contract with McLaren that requires McLaren to cover any financial damages to Alpine if Alpine pursues legal action. Zach then tries to get Alpine to take on Daniel Ricciardo, who, although it's not shown in Drive to Survive, had a hefty penalty in his contract that McLaren had to pay for denying him a seat for 2023. Ultimately, Alpine chose to sign Pierre Gasly, whose only criteria for going with Alpine was not that it was a French team, but that they were fourth in constructors. Atma Safnauer, the team principal of Alpine, even says that McLaren will regret not signing Pierre. I think in hindsight, McLaren does not have any regret. The saga also highlighted Oscar Piastri's nerves of steel, ruthlessness, or is it his inner bastard flexing its muscles since we know it has to come out in order to succeed in Formula One, and having a good advisor by his side in Mark Webber, former Red Bull number two driver, who ensures that Oscar's contract is airtight and he would never be considered number two at McLaren. Alpine's mismanagement of one of the most promising young drivers became one of the biggest driver market stories in recent F1 history.
Mercedes' 2022 season was a challenging one as they struggled to adapt to the new regulations. Their car suffered from severe porpoising, bouncing, affecting performance and driver comfort. While the team lacked the pace to consistently fight for wins early on, they made steady progress throughout the season, improving their aerodynamic and mechanical setup. George Russell secured his first and the team's only Grand Prix victory in Brazil. Hamilton finished P2 at Interlagos, the race not shown in Drive to Survive except for the one scene showing the finish. But overall, Hamilton had his first winless season in his F1 career. Mercedes showed strong late season form, but fell short of their previous dominance and finished third in the Constructors' Championship.
Ferrari 2022 season started with high hopes as they had the fastest car early on, with Charles Leclerc winning two of the first three races. However, their championship challenge unraveled due to constant strategic errors, a couple of driver mistakes, and reliability issues, which cost them crucial points. Every team can make mistakes. The biggest issue for me with Ferrari was that they kept making the same strategy mistakes over and over again. And when they had the foresight to correct a strategy decision, they favored only one driver,
And that driver was not the one who was in the title fight. Case in point, Ferrari encountered the same situation 3 times when in the last few laps, there was a safety car and their competitors were changing tires to soft compound, the fastest tire. In Miami, they left both Leclerc and Sainz out on old hard tires, which is the slowest compound, and it cost them both places and potential win. In Montreal, when the same situation happened again, they inexplicably left both Leclerc and Sainz out on old hard tires again, and the same result as Miami occurred. In Silverstone, when the same situation happened for the third time, Ferrari finally realized that they had to do something different with only one driver, Carlos Sainz. Incredibly, Sainz won, with Leclerc not even getting to the podium. This is such a travesty, especially when Mattia Binotto, team principal, defended his action by saying that he does not like how much the team has been criticized and that there is no number one driver in Ferrari. The most egregious strategy call had to be at the Monaco Grand Prix, Charles Leclerc's home race. When Leclerc was called to pit on the same lap as Carlos Sainz pitted and was told as he was entering the pit lane to stay out when it was obviously too late. This was so bad that Netflix kept showing it at least 3 times in different episodes, as well as the final episode when they tried to recap what happened to Ferrari during the season. It was hard to sit through the first time, but every time it came up, I could feel my anger and frustration rising, as you can probably tell by me just recounting what happened. Despite Carlos Sainz taking his maiden Formula One win at Silverstone, Ferrari struggled to maintain consistency against Red Bull. While they barely secured second place in Constructors' Championship against Mercedes, whose trajectory was completely opposite to Ferrari, and whom Red Bull did not even consider a competitor in 2022, their mid-season decline in internal mismanagement led to frustration, ultimately resulting in team principal Mattia Binotto resigning at the end of the season, which I think happened too late. I would have sacked him after Silverstone.
Red Bull's 2022 season was dominant, despite a shaky start with early reliability issues, although one might call it karma in the first race when both had to retire. That was what was going through my head when I watched that live. After initial setbacks, Max Verstappen and the team found their stride, delivering a record-breaking 15 wins for Verstappen and securing both the drivers' and constructors' championships. Sergio Perez contributed with key victories, including a standout win in Monaco, helping Red Bull clinch their first constructors' title since 2013. The team wasn't without controversy, surprise, surprise, including a cost cap breach and internal tensions over team orders, but their superior race pace and strategy made them the clear front runners. Red Bull Racing was found, much to Christian Horner's denying, to exceed the FIA's cost cap in 2021 by $400,000. Christian Horner tried to suggest this was minor, but his fellow team principal, especially Zach Brown, considered a significant amount violating the financial regulations. As a result, the team received a $7 million fine and a reduction in aerodynamics testing time for 2023. While the breach didn't affect the outcome of the 2021 championship, it added controversy to the already tense season.
And it's very interesting, Aaron, because the reduction in aerodynamic testing time, I would think would be significant. But as we will see when we get to the next season, Red Bull has extreme resiliency of rising from the ashes when everyone thinks there's no way they could come back from something.
I was disappointed, though, that FIA didn't make more of an example out of them because the cost cap went into effect in 2021. I'm glad FIA investigated it. And I know he downplayed it and tried to play it off as it's just catering. It's still over. And literally, when you have drivers who are disqualified for millimeters or the tiniest amount of weight on their cars, the fact that they were only given a fine and that the FIA director said, I'm your only friend, everyone here is out for blood. It seemed like they were playing favorites a bit to me.
This was our first sighting of MBS, Mohammed Ben Sulayem, who, if you haven't followed Formula One, will be a name that will be constantly brought up and not in a good way. But I thought it reeked of conflict of interest. This is another instance of a relationship that should be kept at arm's length. And yet, it seemed like MBS was trying to buddy-buddy with Horner.
It was.
Which I didn't think was appropriate.
No, it's not appropriate at all. Not at all.
Well, speaking of team principals, what is a team principal's responsibility? Well, a Formula One team principal is responsible for overseeing the entire operation of an F1 team, balancing technical development, race strategy, and team operation. They make critical decisions on car performance, driver management, sponsorship, and budget allocations while ensuring compliance with FIA regulation. Acting as the face of the team, they also handle media relations and negotiations, playing a crucial role in shaping a team's success both on and off the track. This sounds exhausting. It's obviously a very tough job. We do see some examples of when it's done extremely well and when it's a complete failure. This season, we witnessed questionable behavior and decision from several team principals. In fact, the Ferrari episode is called A Matter of Principle. And that could be because Matteo Binotto has so many faults. The worst thing that I could lay at his feet is that he refused to take accountability for Ferrari's strategic blunders, constantly hitting back at critics that they were being too critical and negative. When questioned about doing everything in his power to bury Leclerc at Silverstone by making the same mistake with his strategy three times, Mattia said, "We were convinced, even with hard tires, he could maintain his position in this race and win." When challenged with regards to his approach, he said, "What tells you he would have won if he changed tires?" "I don't know. How about the fact that the guy you allowed to change tires actually won? That's your evidence that it would have worked if you just tried it." All the other team principals and drivers were very clear that it was Ferrari as a team, and thus ultimately team principal, who were responsible in Leclerc's failure to secure his first driver's championship. Christian Horner said, "They fucked up Leclerc's strategy. They should have boxed both," with regards to the situation at Silverstone. At Monaco, Drive to Survive shows Christian and Max discussing how atrocious Ferrari's blunders were. Jos Capito, Williams's team, specifically said that team principal is responsible for the strategy. Toto Wolff, when asked whether team management caused Ferrari to lose wins, answered with, "Clearly." Fernando Alonso, who used to drive for Ferrari, said after another blunder at the French Grand Prix, "Ferrari always does some strange strategies, so that was one of those." And finally, Lewis Hamilton said Ferrari made so many mistakes this year. Despite Ferrari's strong start to the season and Leclerc's early championship lead, Binotto struggled to lead the team through key challenges leading to frustrations from both drivers and fans. By the end of the season, with Ferrari unable to capitalize on their early advantage, Binotto resigned as team principal, marking the end of an era after 4 years in the role. The most gratifying part of Drive to Survive with respect to Matteo Binotto was the preview for the next season, which included a section called Out with the Old, and included Binotto saying goodbye.
Toto Wolff is my favorite team principal on the grid, but he faced a very challenging season as the team struggled with performance issues due to the new regulations, notably dealing with porpoising and the lack of competitiveness compared to Red Bull and Ferrari. Early in the season, Wolff's frustrations became apparent during a team principal meeting where his outspoken comments about the new car and the performance deficit were met with disapproval from other team principals. His emotional outbursts, especially regarding perceived unfairness to the new regulations, led to some tension in the paddock, with rivals viewing his complaints as overly dramatic. Despite this, Wolff remained determined and helped guide Mercedes to finish third in the Constructors' Championship, showing resilience despite the team's struggles. It was frustrating for me to see him act like that because I have placed him on such a high pedestal for how he holds and carries himself. I didn't disagree with some of the other principals, which was surprising to me because normally I am very quick to defend Toto, but I do think he was in the wrong. I think he was knocked down a couple pegs because he was not accustomed coming from behind or on the back foot, as one of them said.
I agree. But I think I'm glad he went through that to get it out of his system and also to provide the most hilarious and a hallmark moment, I think, of Drive to Survive, which is when Christian Horner accuses Toto of playing to the cameras. I cannot even begin to touch the hypocrisy of that. And then them going back and forth regarding change their fucking car because Toto was insistent that the porpoising issue is trouble for all drivers, including Checo, and he had printed emails to prove it. So it's hilarious because every time Toto and Christian get into it, you'll have commentators constantly reference this meeting, saying, like, who has the emails to prove something? Although the other team's principals did not appreciate being called, in Gunther's words, killers, you can see the glee in some of their eyes as they see the meltdown from Toto and also the squabbling between Christian and Toto. As Yos Capito says, it was great. Sitting back, watching the drama, it was very entertaining.
It was entertaining, even though it didn't shed him in the best of light. Now it is time for memorable quotes. This is the fourth round of the Who Said That Quote game. I am going to try to stump Ina since we are currently tied at 7 apiece. Okay, this is said by a driver. If they want to fight, they will pay the price. Was it Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, Fernando Alonso, or Sergio Perez?
It does sound a lot like Max. I can't imagine Leclerc saying that. I also can't think. But since you were trying to stomp me, I'm going to go against what I want to say and say Perez.
Fernando.
He was my second choice, and I went against the grain. Okay. 8-7 in your favor.
All right. I don't think I've led this. Prove them wrong and believe in yourself. This is also said from a driver. It's either Mick Schumacher, Yuki Tsunoda, George Russell, or Charles Leclerc.
Mick Schumacher?
Yes.
Whew. 8-8. Okay.
All right. 8-8. I want to become the world champion, and I think this year we have an opportunity to do so. Was
Leclerc.
It Leclerc? Yes.
You know, you can't stop
I
me with
know,
his quote.
I know. You're up 9-8. I threw you a softball at the end.
Yeah, you did. You did. Like, I do pay attention when he talks. So
I figured. Well, you didn't last time. I got you on him
Well,
before.
That was, yeah. Listen, you get one. So now is the time for us to talk about superlatives. And for my first superlative, it's best on-track action featuring Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen fighting for the lead in Bahrain Grand Prix that resulted in 5 changes of lead. It was clean, exciting, and exhibited the highest level of skill from both drivers. To this date, F1 fans are clamoring for more Leclerc versus Verstappen on-track battles, since Max respects Leclerc more than some of his other competitors and does not become overly aggressive with him. The other superlative I have is best fan interaction, and that goes to your favorite team principal, Aaron, Toto Wolff. He met a fan at a Harvard Business School who shows him a dog that she named Toto after him. Toto, the principal, without missing a beat, says he's a good-looking, intelligent dog. It was very wholesome, funny, and a good example of how personable Toto can be. Another superlative is best joke. At the Miami Grand Prix, when Romain Grosjean shows up in the paddock, he jokes with Gunther that he is the DHL driver. And finally, I have most relatable moment. At the French Grand Prix, there's a pain au chocolat station. When Pierre Gasly goes by, he implies that he would love to take one, but he cannot because he has to maintain his diet. Yuki Tsunoda, on the other hand, is grateful to take one, eats it with gusto and pure enjoyment. This moment endeared Yuki to me from the first time I saw this moment and made me smile again when I rewatched it.
My first superlative is for biggest hypocrite, and this should come as no shock to anyone. Christian Horner is the outright winner of this one. There were so many times, you've already highlighted one of them, where his hypocrisy, it was just untenable. I couldn't take it. I was so upset. There is a situation that we'll talk about when coming up shortly regarding a safety car at Monza. And when he was on the radio complaining about how it would be unfair to Max, I literally remember jumping off of my couch, yelling at the TV, and promptly saying, what a hypocrite, because it is, they're actually enforcing the rule correctly instead of what happened at Abu Dhabi. Christian Horner wins for biggest hypocrite. Hands down, I'm pretty sure he always will.
I just was going to say, every season.
Every season, without a doubt. My next superlative would be for best big brother, and that goes to Pierre Gasly. Him and Yuki, their relationship is so heartwarming because I believe Pierre really did look out for Yuki and always had his back. Although I would not hire them to serenade a wedding or any event based on their cover of Adele, but their bond is pretty special and that was very sweet to watch.
But my lost to time moment from season 5, these are the moments which I forgot from my first watch, but I resonate a lot more now. The first would be Otmar Szafnauer's digs at Papa Stroll and Aston Martin. As you all remember, Otmar was Force India's team principal, which became Racing Point when Papa Stroll took over that team, and then it became Aston Martin. So his first dig was at Papa Stroll taking over. He's saying then he felt more pressure, it was less fun, and there was less achievement. Ouch. The second one was even worse. It was at a team dinner where he said, I was not with you guys last year. I was with the bad guys, the enemy. So I get the reference to the enemy because obviously every team views the other teams as enemy. But bad guys? I mean, that is very telling. The other loss of time moment was the fact that Red Bull was interested in signing Oscar Piastri. Christian Horner mentioned that Oscar was an outstanding talent and that they had an opportunity to potentially do something with him, but decided not to pursue it, which Christian regrets because he thinks that Oscar could be the next Max. I'm not surprised that Oscar was attractive to Red Bull. What surprised me is Christian Horner comparing Oscar to Max, which I think is extremely hard praise that Christian doesn't throw around quite often.
No, he doesn't, but you have to remember, Oscar did win F2 and F3. First go at both of them. And in one of our silly season predictions, he is predicted to be winning the World Drivers' Championship by summer break.
Fair. The other thing that was lost to time is actually new information for me. It was that when it's wet, it's better to overtake on the outside. So the conventional wisdom seems to suggest that overtaking on the inside is more successful, which is what Lando Norris keeps not following when he is fighting with Max Verstappen and keeps trying to overtake him on the outside with diminishing result. So realizing that it actually is a preferred strategy on the wet, I feel like somebody should tell Lando that, hey, use that strategy when it's wet, but try something else when it's dry. Speaking of Lando Norris, he stated that he does not like chocolate. And just like that, my estimation of him went down.
Since I have watched all the seasons live, and I am new to watching these on Drive to Survive, I am going to do a segment called Reframed, Live versus Drive. This highlights my memories from watching the seasons live, comparing them to how Drive to Survive presents the narrative, uncovering differences in perspective, drama, and storytelling. One storyline in particular that live in the season of 2021 was Max versus Sergio. Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez had a strong partnership for most of the 2022 season, but tensions surfaced later in the year due to a mix of team orders, internal priorities, and a very controversial qualifying incident. In the Monaco Grand Prix qualifying, Perez crashed and brought out a red flag. This prevented Verstappen from improving his lap time. Months later, rumors circulated that Perez may have intentionally crashed to secure a better position on the grid, which he later converted into a race win at Monaco. While unconfirmed, some believe that Verstappen held on to this incident as a grudge.
I just want to say, I'm not sure Perez did it intentionally, but I 100% believe Verstappen held a grudge.
I concur. So when we get to the Brazilian Grand Prix, which is not showed on Netflix, team orders in the closing laps at Interlagos, Verstappen was asked to let Perez pass to help him secure second place in the Drivers' Championship. Verstappen refused, telling them over the radio to, quote, I have my reasons. And Perez responded with, this shows who he really is.
I just want to say that confirms why we need team radios to keep being broadcast, because that is gold.
It is. And although Netflix usually showcases such drama, they seemed to completely ignore what transpired between the teammates, which I believe had a lot to do with Christian Horner having more control on the narrative and the storyline.
Could have been a whole episode about that arc that I think would be more interesting than some of the arcs that they highlighted this season.
For sure. I'm really surprised they did not go down that path of drama between those two teammates like they typically would have.
And the fact that you said that Christian Horner has so much influence kind of shows you what he thinks about Perez, because you would think he would want Perez to be also highlighted as much as possible as the very secure number two choice for Red Bull. except for Monaco, there's no acknowledgement that he won anything else.
He did a lot to secure the Constructors' Championship, and they really did seem to have a camaraderie between the two of them. Max and that grudge that took that downhill pretty quick. Netflix gave little airtime to Sebastian Vettel's retirement, but F1 made sure to honor the four-time world champion. Before his final race, Lewis Hamilton organized a group dinner with the entire grid, and on race day, drivers joined Vettel in a track run for a symbolic farewell. Vettel also wore a custom helmet, and his Aston Martin had special tribute messages on the chassis. F1 personnel gave him a standing ovation before the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, and after finishing P10, Vettel celebrated with donuts, a nod to his Red Bull days, and delivered a final team radio message thanking the sport and his fans. The third instance that was very different from live to drive was a safety car at Monza. After the Abu Dhabi drama in 2021, the Monza 2022 race safety car brought renewed focus on race control. With six laps remaining, both Verstappen and Leclerc pitted for fresh tires, anticipating a final shootout, but the race never restarted due to insufficient time for all the cars to rejoin. This contrasted with Abu Dhabi 2021, where race director Michael Massey ignored standard procedures to restart the race, ultimately altering the championship, which when this was going on live, Horner was on the radio saying this would be unfair to Max. And I think everybody in the world was like, well, what do you think happened to Hamilton? And Hamilton himself pointed out there's only one time in the history of the sport where they haven't done the rules like today. And that's the one where it changed the result of the championship.
This season of Drive to Survive was more of a reset than a nonstop roller coaster action. There were new narratives set up for the new regulation cycle, and we had a lot of drivers acknowledging the fourth wall, especially with regards to Daniel Ricciardo, because at the time, everyone thought it was his final year in Formula One due to Oscar replacing him in McLaren and no other team stepping up to sign him for 2023. Daniel even tells Netflix, "This show would not be the same without me. What do you do?" There is truth in his assertion, since nobody on the paddock has the same presence, charm, and charisma as him. I especially love the moment during the Austin Grand Prix when he shows up in the paddock on a horse. Someone with that much personality, charm, and appeal is very hard to replace. Since this was not as exciting a season as 2021, Netflix was trying really hard to come up with an interesting narrative, to the point that if something did not fit this narrative, they ignored it completely or manipulated what they showed. This is not the first season where they had this done, but it was more noticeable this season. As we mentioned before, there are a lot of races that they show over and over again because they cannot be at all of the races, and sometimes an interesting race can produce multiple storylines. They cannot fit just one episode story arc. This season, this was taken to a new extreme. We saw Monaco a lot. British Grand Prix at Silverstone a lot. On the other hand, we did not see the race in Brazil. So we only saw Kevin Magnussen's pole in misleading highlights of what is expected for next year. We already mentioned that there was absolutely no focus on Max versus Sergio Perez rivalry. And another example of manipulation involving Red Bull is happened at Singapore Grand Prix, which was shown only once. Netflix wanted to present that at that Grand Prix, where budget cap shenanigans with Red Bull came to a head, that it affected performance of the team and Max specifically. Max did have a terrible race. He locked up in the beginning and ended up P7 behind both McLarens, including Daniel Ricciardo. He also ended up behind Lance Stroll, which was not shown in Drive to Survive. The scenes of the team show them being dejected, but in reality, Sergio Perez won, which went against the narrative that it really affected the team. So what Netflix decided to do, they never show who won that race. They never indicate that the other Red Bull driver won because it doesn't fit the narrative. This was highly manipulative. This season makes me apprehensive of what will be shown next year because, spoiler alert, 2023 Formula One season is not as exciting as 2022. I'm especially hesitant because they use Kevin Magnussen's pole in 2022 to prop up the storytelling for 2023 season. This is highly suspect and makes me think a lot of the drama in the next season will be manipulated.
Could be, and I'll find out since I started watching and my live to drive might be a little bit longer than 3 points. While we are on topic, let's talk about this current season's silly season rumors or just some F1 updates. So the week that this is going out is actually preseason testing in Bahrain. So it'll be exciting to actually see some data coming out, what we can expect for 2025. Also, Gunther Steiner finalized his settlement with Haas. In 2024, Gunther took legal action against Haas, claiming that the team breached agreements by continuing to use his name for promotional purposes and not paying bonuses that were promised. As you recall, he was let go at the end of the 2023 season. Haas brought a counter lawsuit against Steiner involving his book, Surviving to Drive. This legal battle was resolved after 28 hours in mediation. Both parties have confirmed that they have settled the matter and wish each other well for the future. One exciting thing that we might see is to add a mandatory second pit stop to Monaco. Monaco is, as they say, the crown jewel on the racing calendar as far as circuits go. For a viewer, it's not the most exciting to watch because typically whoever is on pole position is the winner of the race. If you add a mandatory second pit stop, this can completely change the strategy and make this race a little bit more exciting.
Just one thing about the second pit stop in Monaco. So I completely understand why that would be beneficial to make the race a little bit more interesting. For me, depending on who's winning, I don't care that it's a 70-lap procession. I will watch my favorite driver lead that procession until the end. But I'm also hesitant because I just went through all the Ferrari strategy blunders. Giving Ferrari another pit stop to completely mess up gives me some heart palpitations. But on the other hand, we are under different team principle. The team is very much more together. So fingers crossed, that includes some excitement.
And the last silly season rumor, Otmar, our favorite team principal, who is attention to detail, hopefully will have improved if this silly season rumor comes to fruition, is that he has been working with American funders and a car manufacturer and is looking to add a 12th team for the future to the grid. We'll see. We might see him back on the grid.
And I just want to add, we are already seeing Mattia Binotto on the grid as team principal of Sauber. I think I feel about that the same way Charles Leclerc feels, which is out of sight, out of mind. So why are you back?
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an update.
But also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite F1 team principal. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.